30 years ago, I got a job as a caretaker on a cattle slash pleasure ranch in the Sierra Nevada foothills of California. It's a very beautiful area in California, and this particular ranch was not a typical dude ranch, but it was a family affair. It was a wealthy family, and the parents were in there. They were both 65 when I arrived, and they had four adult children, and they had five grandchildren at that time. They eventually had nine grandchildren, and one of my first assignments was to grow a family orchard, and it was to grow 25 to 30 fruit trees, and everybody in the family picked what they wanted, and so that was my assignment, and I was thrilled about it because I had had some experience with it, but I had never been where it got cold, and it doesn't. I'm going to put out a disclaimer first off. This class, this presentation, is not for growing citrus in Nebraska or growing figs in Canada. This is to deal with frost in the springtime primarily and a few other things. And so the principles are going to be mostly the same wherever you live, but you're going to have to match it to your climate. Anyway, when I got to the ranch, I had 490 acres. And now, just pretend that you have 490 acres, and they look like this. Unfortunately, the picture got a little fuzzy in the translation, but it's hills. It's up and down. And if you had this choice, where would you put your orchard, if it looked like that? Nothing flat. In our country, a flat looks like this. What I didn't do for Audioverse, the picture is foothills, and it's up and down, quite steep, with some trees and grass. And anyway, the second picture shows an area to the right that is a little bit higher, and I was going to have Weston show me how to use his mouse, but there's Weston. Is he here or is he gone? Oh, he's gone. Okay. Well, in this picture, without having a mouse to. Well, let's see. Okay. There's a draw area right through here. And that's one draw. And then there's a canyon right in here. And then in the back of the bottom of the canyon is a bigger canyon. Do you have a pointer that has a dot or something? An arrow?
I've only got this, but this doesn't work too well.
No, that's not doing, that's hardly any better than my finger.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Anyway, there's one major canyon, and there's two, as my friend from Kentucky called them, draws or drainages or places where things go down. Now, one of the principles that has to be dealt with is heat rises and cold comes down. In our country, we're in the hills, fire goes up. Fire wants to go up, and it will race up. It will go down, but it will creep down, but it will race up the hills. And so then cold is the reverse. It wants to go down. And it's like rain, and that it'll come down and then follow and find the lowest spot and then keep going, and then it'll find a channel and it will follow the channel to the lowest spot. And if there is no outlet, then it will build up at that spot. But go to the next slide. Can we get this a little squarer? I'm afraid this is not my setup, so let's see what we can do. Okay, this shows what is considered called frost drainage. And on the right, you can see, well, we'll start on the left. This picture is designed for, there's other illustrations that I've worked with that are similar. Anyway, from the top to the bottom, they had it at 1,500 feet of change in elevation. And so at the bottom, where it shows, it looks like a pool, that's cold air that has gone to the bottom, and they have it at 25 degrees, and as an illustration. And then as you work up the sides of the hill, the temperature gets warmer. And so if you're somewhere between 50 and 100 feet above the bottom, you're in what they call a thermal belt. And that will last for several hundred feet, 400 or 500 feet. And then the temperature starts decreasing as you go higher. Where we were at the ranch, we were at the bottom of a canyon, and we would be 10 degrees cooler than the nearest little town. And people would say, well, are you as cold as this resort town that's 2,500 feet higher up? And the answer was yes. We were just as cold as they were. But we didn't get the snow because our elevation was lower. They got the snow. But we were cold. Anyway, this shows that they have, in this case, well, trees or vines or whatever in the thermal belt, and on the left, and on the right, it shows where the frost comes down, and the trees are there, but there's a big tree in the before it gets to the bottom, and that acts as a dam, and that holds the air back, and that air behind it is colder. And so you've created your own. You haven't created. There's a problem has been created because of the dam that's preventing it from the cold air from continuing down. The air comes down cold and it passes by and does little damage except when it gets to the bottom and sits there, and that's where it causes the damage. This picture lost a lot in translation, but this is my story, and I went down memory lane, and so 30 years ago, I had a red beard. And I had a pretty decent garden, too. In the process, the neighbors had a vineyard. And I spent a bunch of time with them, and they taught me a bunch of things. And one of their big things with frost protection was they had an alarm system. They had sensors out in the vineyard, and it was hardwired into their house, and they had an alarm system. And when it got down to 34 degrees, not 32 degrees, but 34 degrees, it would set off an alarm, and they would jump out of bed and stagger out and go turn on their pumps and get the water going. And so today, you can do things wireless. And so it's easier not to have to do hardwire everything. It's still not cheap. It still costs money. You have to justify it. In the case of commercial people, they have to get a crop. So they spend the money that's needed. In case of two or three trees in your backyard, you have to justify the expense. Because it's $150 to $500, depending on what you want. And it's a weather station with an alarm system involved. And the modern ones go to your telephone. That's one important thing. If you're in a situation where you can't avoid if you're going to be in a frost, Oh, boy. This picture didn't come out good. These are a few examples of irrigation systems to protect for frost. The top left is what is called a flipper, and it's what I used on my grapes, and it's this little narrow micro sprinkler, and it goes, and it makes this very narrow band of moisture, water, over, and it's like 2 feet wide, 3 feet wide, and it goes right over your row of vines. And so it works great for grapes. It does not work for most other things, but it's great for grapes. The picture on the bottom shows the sprinklers underneath the trees, and it frost, cold, goes down, and it goes along the ground, and then when it hits something, it builds up. And so it's going to freeze the ground. If you can keep the ground from freezing, in this case with water, then you don't have to have water hitting up in the canopy. It just keep the frost off the ground, and everything else is going to stay be warmer. And so that's your purpose. The picture on the right is just another micro sprinkler that you can use. There's all sorts of sprinklers. The principle is get water out there and look in your garage or your barn or your whatever, and or see what works. This is not an advertisement for any particular brand, but these are possibilities. This picture, it shows what. This is not a spring frost. This is a cold winter frost freeze with citrus, and they put the sprinklers on the trees, and they wanted to prevent the tree from getting it. When the ice gets there, it stays at 32 degrees. And so you've created an insulation on the tree to prevent it from getting colder and doing lots of damage. But in this particular case, with the long icicles hanging on there, you have to keep the water running until it melts it off after the sun comes out, or those icicles are just going to break your tree, and you will end up with more damage than if you hadn't put the water on there in the first place. This is citrus in either California or Florida or Texas. Another thing that is used in frost protection, commercial frost protection, that can be and should be incorporated into home orchards is some sort of wind. If you can move the air, still air is what freezes. Moving air doesn't freeze nearly as quickly. And so if you can move the air, the commercial people use wind machines. And a wind machine is a propeller on a big engine on a pedestal of 10 or 15 feet in the air, and it blows the air, and it sounds like an engine airplane taking off. And if you have neighbors close by and you turn that thing on at 2 o'clock in the morning, your neighbors are going to call the cops. So this is a fan. This will move a lot of air. This costs a little bit of money. But your typical box fan that you have in your house probably won't move enough air. At least my box fan wouldn't do the trick. So this will move a lot of air, and you could use this instead of water, or you can use this in conjunction with water, whatever works. But having a fan is another alternative. Now, I asked the question earlier, if you had 490 acres and you could plant your fruit trees anywhere in that 490 acres, where would you plant it? And that was a very vital, important question, but when it came to me, I had no choice. I had to plant it where there was a place so I could irrigate it, because in California, there is no water, no rain in the summer. it had to be a place to protect it from the animals because it was a cattle ranch. And then it had to be convenient. And so those places put it next to my house, and my house was next to the creek. And for the, and in addition to that, I didn't know any better. So I put it next to the creek, which was the worst place I could have put it as far as frost was concerned, because I was in that cold part, in that part at the bottom where it gets the coldest. And but this is the trees that we planted 30 years ago, and this, these are the grapes. These were a little higher. We put the flipper sprinklers on them. They did well. California, San Andreas. After many years of not being able to grow peaches, we put them next to the house, on the south side of the house. But what was important was that the air current came down and hit the north side of the house. And so you don't want to put your trees on the side where the current comes down. You want to be on the lower side. And so we put the trees next to the house, next to the carport. And there was a, well, show some more pictures. This is one, this is another. This is the same tree the next year. And so it's right next to the house. And what that does, and picture's not going to show it, but the current will come down and it will come to the top, the house, and it will either go over the top or it will go around the sides, but it doesn't hug the walls. And so if it forms a current, and what you are doing is you are, this is a concept that I learned the hard way, the easy way. I'm not sure how to do it, how to say it, but frost is made up of two parts, and most people don't know that. But the dew sits on the leaves, and then they freeze, and then it explodes the cell and damages it or kills it. And if you can prevent the dew from sitting on the leaves, then the temperature can be much lower and not damage the tree. In the carport right here, I have the carport just a few feet from that. I knew it was cold, and I knew my car had a thermometer in it. So I went out and I checked the thermometer, and the peach trees were in full bloom, and the temperature was 24 degrees. Well, and there was no damage because they had been protected. The house protected the tree from having the dew sit on it. And so that was, and I was able to get peaches and peaches and nectarines consistently, and I'd have to thin heavily because there was no damage from the cold after I started planting next to the house. This picture, one of the things for frost protection, there was a question earlier about mulching. And mulching is very important, and you have to weigh the mulching. But for best frost protection, it's best to have underneath the trees clear. You want to have nothing on the soil, and because the moisture comes up from the soil and that heats around the tree. If you have grass or you have mulch or you have something on the soil, then the moisture is trapped under that and it's not able to come up. And if your soil is dry, it's not able to release it. So if you have dry weather and a frost is predicted, then it's best to put water on it. In our particular case, and probably for most of you, our frosts come immediately after a storm. So we have rain, and then we have a cold front come in immediately after the storm, and it freezes. And so we didn't have a problem with having dry soil. But it's possible that if you did, or if you didn't anyway. Uh-oh, there's missing part of the picture. Let's see, which way do I go? What this picture shows, as Weston continues to fiddle with it, is we were at the ranch for 25 years, but over that course of time, we were always looking for a place of our own, and we didn't know what we were looking for at first, but after dealing with the frost for many years, we said we wanted a place where we could grow fruit trees, and we wanted a place where we could grow a garden, and we wanted a place where there was good frost drainage. And so we found this place that had, it was steep on one side, and then it came down and leveled out. And so the first thing we did was we took recording thermometers. They recorded for 1 week, week at a time. They had the high and the low. And we recorded to see if there was a difference between the top and the bottom of the property to see if it was working, if the frost drainage was working or not. And what we found was that, as you can see in this illustration, there's a thermometer at the top, there's one partway down, and then there's another one at the bottom on the left. And there was 3 to 7 degrees difference between the one on the bottom and the left and the one on the top. And so there was definitely frost drainage. It was colder at the bottom than the top. There was 35 feet change in elevation. Weston mentioned that he had, I think, 80 feet of change in elevation or something. It was pretty significant. And if you have that, that's super. But you got to live with what you got. And this, we had 35 feet, and we thought that was pretty good. See if we can keep going. Oh, can you help with the focus? This is just another picture of the. Just another picture. This shows grape for audio verse. This shows some grapevines, and it shows buckets under the grapevines, and the buckets have water in them, and this is in. It is to gain 1 or 2 degrees of frost protection by putting water under the plants. It won't do a lot of frost protection, but if you only needed 1 or 2 degrees and it got down to 31 or 32 and that kept you from losing your fruit, then this is better than nothing. This is the picture. Weston went over the zones, and this is another picture of the zones. And when you're planting trees, Weston mentioned it is very important to be able to have your trees survive. And that, of course, is very important. When you're in an area like we are, that is prone to being colder than anywhere else in that particular zone, or to have more of a frost problem than that particular zone, you need to, instead of looking for that zone, you need to say, when you're looking at the little blurbs that are in the catalog, it needs to say, does well where there's a frost problem, or does well in severe winter springs, or does well where it's difficult to grow in the springtime. And because if you're in the normal area, you don't need that. But if you're in an area that's subject to late frost, you definitely need it. And in this, it's USDA. If you look it up, USDA zones, and then you put in your zip code, it will tell you what zone you're in. You need to know when your last frost is going to come. And usually, if you talk to your neighbors and stuff, they'll tell you when to plant tomatoes, because you don't plant tomatoes until the last frost, outside, unless you're protecting them some way. if you're protecting them, then this doesn't matter. But so in our area, Mark Twain made our county famous. He wrote a little story. It's called The Jumping Frog Jubilee of Calaveras County. And we're in Calaveras County. And so our county fair is called the Jumping Frog Jubilee of Calaveras County, and they jump frogs. And they get behind them, and they scare them to death, and they make them try to jump. And that happens the third weekend in May. And most of you who think that, well, California is warm, and you don't get frost or anything like that. Well, in our particular county, we would go warm, cold, warm, cold, warm, cold, over and over. And after each warm, you had to be prepared for that cold that would damage your fruit. And they say, don't plant your tomatoes until frog jump. Tomatoes. Yeah, got to say it correctly. And so the third week in May was our time to plant tomatoes. In the next county south, they had a different saying, which was, don't plant your tomatoes until Mother's Day. And we thought, well, that's not the same. But if you look at the calendar, Mother's Day is the second Sunday in May, and frog jump is that same week. So they're talking about the same thing. It's a few days difference, but it's the same time. And so you need to know in your area when you can plant things. I have a friend who lives in Dallas, and he said he's never seen it frost after April 15. Well, and that works. But it's colder in Dallas by at least a zone. I think they're 8A and we're 9A. And so they're theoretically colder, but their frosts stop long before ours do. When you're in an area and you want to grow something that can grow in the next zone warmer, you can sometimes find ways to do that. In where we are in the foothills, we can, in the Central Valley of California, they grow a bunch of citrus. In the south, they grow them in big orchards. In the north, they grow them in people's yards. But they grow them, and I love citrus, and I wished I could have grown citrus. But in our particular area, if you have excellent frost drainage, so you're on a ridge, and the frost can go down both sides, that's a good place, and they always put them next to a house. So next to a house, and with excellent frost drainage, and you can grow citrus. And so when we moved to this property, we put in these water tanks up at the very highest point on the property, and then we put a lemon tree, and we're able to protect it because the water tanks are heat sinks, and they collect heat in the water, and then it has the best frost drainage. And you can also use Christmas lights on small trees to do some frost protection. And if you put a bag over the tree and have Christmas lights in it, you can have even more protection. But the Christmas lights are not LEDs. It has to be incandescent. It has to put out heat. And if it puts out the heat, depending on how cold you are, you can put one round of Christmas lights, or you can do it 3 or 4 times, and you can gain a lot of heat that way. And you have it on the bags, keep it. And then if you're going to cover with bags, you don't want on the right it shows where the bag is tied to the trunk, and it allows the ground, the moisture that's in the ground comes up and goes around the tree, and you're not able to utilize the heat from the moisture. if you can put ground staples on the around the tree and hold the bag down to the ground, then the moisture will turn into heat and come up inside of the bag and add to the ability to keep it warm. Okay. So in review, so choose where you plant wisely based on your zones. The warm air rises and the cold air sinks. So plant in the thermal zone if you can. Plant sensitive plants next to buildings, walls, water tanks, where they can be protected from the cold temperature and excessive moisture or dew from descending on the plant and freezing. Storms often follow a cold front, are often followed by a cold front in clear skies, which often result in frost. So be aware of that. If it's going to freeze, if it's going to have clear skies after a storm, be prepared to do frost protection if necessary. Use the temperature alert thermometers to wake you up, the alarm systems. And if you don't like to be woken up, you can use a timer, which if it turns on at whatever time you set it at, but you can have the water or a fan or something come on at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it comes on every day. And so you're going to water that, or if it's a water system you're turning on, it's going to come on every day if you need it or not, but you don't have to wake up and go do it. And usually I found that the day it was the coldest was the day I slept the best. So I was not one that was good with the alarm system would have, yeah. And by not having stuff under the plants, you're allowing the moisture to help keep your temperatures up. Having bare earth helps it keep the temperatures up. And keeping the soil moist also helps keep the temperature. Oh, and you can also use buckets of water under the trees, which will also release some water, some heat. Not a lot, but a little bit. And you can use lights and covers to protect, to remove, or you can move the plants inside. In our area, they do a lot with citrus. They'll take them inside the house in a potted plant or something, and then they'll put it back out when it's warmer. And is there any questions? I'm hard of hearing.
I'm sorry. I was confused by that picture with the bag.
Okay. Okay. It's possible that the bag, that the picture was out of focus because a lot of them were. But the remnant on the ground with the either stapled or with rocks or something securing it to the ground, the moisture is able to come up inside of that. The other one, it's wrapped tight around the base, the trunk of the tree, and the moisture goes out. And instead of going in, it goes out. I don't know if that helps you understand. No, you want it to go in. You want it to stay inside. Okay.
You said that the bare earth
uh-huh.
radiates heat. So if you cultivate around your trees right before the frost or loosen the soil right around it, would that help to radiate more heat?
Okay. To repeat the question, would it help if you cultivated the soil underneath the tree, would that radiate more heat? And the answer is yes. You do not want a lid. You want the water and the moisture to come out of that bucket. If you start out warm, okay, the question was, when you have a bucket under the tree, do you want the lid on the bucket or not, and should it be warm water or cold water? It doesn't matter what you start with. By morning time, it's going to be cold. Okay, the question was, if you're expecting to have cold weather, is it, if you go out and put a frost blanket on it, should you leave the frost blanket on it during the daytime? The frost blankets that I am familiar with are breathable. And if it's breathable, if you're not using plastic, but it's breathable, it's fine to leave it on during the day. The question was, if it's sunny, would that build up enough heat, or would that cause it to be too hot? And the first question was, do you leave it on for a couple of days? And if you leave it on for a couple of days, it's not an issue. If you're going to leave it on for the rest of the spring, then you don't want to do that. We eat a lot of fruit, and that is a very important question that I missed in the prior part. There are certain fruits that are much more hardy that can be grown where it will get colder, and there are certain fruits that are much less hardy and you need to watch out for. And the question was, what did you like the best? I liked everything that made it to maturity. But we had some amazing pears. We had some amazing peaches. The apples usually, well, they were pretty good too. Sea salt, I don't have time to explain it, but sea salt is a wonderful thing. If you can apply sea salt, it makes the flavor go way up. There's other classes that are strictly on sea salt, so I'm not, but that's a really important, is sea salt makes things taste better.
Do you apply it to the leaves or the soil?
The question was, do you apply sea salt to the leaves or the soil? You can apply it to either, but I preferred to apply it as a foliar. And there was a question here? Time up. Well, you can look online. The question was, do I have any recommendations for a frost or a weather station that has an alert system to tell your telephone when it's going to freeze or not? And there's a number of things you can look up online and to purchase. And they will have their own description. I don't have an alert system. The question was, what if you were to put black plastic around the base of the tree, would that absorb heat, or would that be beneficial or detrimental? And the answer is, it would absorb heat, but it wouldn't allow the moisture that's trapped in the soil to be released up. So, from my understanding, it's more important to have the moisture released up, because you're dealing with up here. You're not dealing when I say up here. Audioverse doesn't know what, you can't see my hand. I raise my hand up, but to the top. So if the tree fruit is up in it, as high as you can reach, where the black plastic is going to warm right there at the earth, not where the flowers are blooming. There's a question in the back.
You mentioned putting buckets of water by the
tree. Yes.
You want to put hot water?
Well, that question was addressed. Okay, the question was, what kind of water do you want to put in the bucket? And the answer is, it doesn't matter, because by morning it's going to be cold. So just the fact that it's water is going to keep the temperature warm. Okay, the question was, if you're on a hill and you have a thermal belt, do you only plant in the thermal belt? That's for best results. You can plant anywhere you want, but you're going to have warmer temperatures and less likelihood of frost if you're within the thermal belt.
Also, do you recommend planting in contour line?
Well, the question was, do I recommend doing planting in contour lines? I'm going to go back to Weston's example and say, I've not experienced that. I don't know the answer. Question. Well, the question was, should you plant on the north side of a slope or on the south side of the slope? And this brings up another point that I missed in my presentation. The north and the south, if you plant on the north side where it's colder, it's going to bud out later. And you have a little advantage. You might have a week or two advantage, but it doesn't stop all frost. It's not a bad thing to do, but it's this. There's a whole bunch of parts that you need to meld together, and that would be something that could work. In my particular case, I'm on the south side, and it works quite well. And you also have to remember, where is my house? Where can I do it? You can only plant what you have. You can't plant what's not available. Okay, I guess we're done. It was great. Okay, I guess we're done. So have a wonderful rest of your day. And
I just had one comment, and all I wanted to say is that I know that some crops in general, like I think you talked about how some varieties will bloom later than others, right?
Yes.
And maybe you mentioned this, I don't know, that some whole crops will bloom later than others. Like apples in general are delayed in our area by like, I'd say 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks from peaches, just as a whole crop. And I don't know, maybe you already mentioned that.
But. Well, he's totally correct. There's certain things that will grow in certain areas better than others, and there's certain things that bloom later, and apples bloom later. The thing that I was surprised about was that pears bloom early and plums bloom early, and yet they take the frost better than the others. And so you have to know what works, and apples bloom later. Peaches are fairly early, and they're one of the sensitive ones. Apricots are very sensitive. In our area, almonds are very sensitive. They grow them in the bottom, but they don't grow those up where we are much. And I don't think they grow much anywhere else in the whole country. One of the points that I did not mention for grapes, when you're growing grapes in our part of the country, West, I'm not familiar with how you prune muscadine, but the grapes put out a bud, and they want to go to the end of the cane. And so if you wait as long as you can, and then you prune it, you're going to gain yourself two more weeks, because it's going to start out at the bottom, and you cut back here, and you leave it, a foot long, and there's 10 or 15 buds on that cane or that spur, then you're going to have gained yourself 2 weeks before the frost. And so in my area, I prune the grapes the last week of March, the first week of April, when the sap is running. And so you're going to have little puddles wherever you make a cut. Have a wonderful day.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.